Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, because you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fish and Game Podcast. You got your host here. Your hostess with the mostest. Just kidding, Justin. That's me. Here today with my good buddy, partner in crime, although not really any crimes, but just, you know, friends. And I'm going to talk about some wild food stuff. Pretty excited. We're going to be doing another butchery episode, as promised. So if you scroll back two episodes ago, you would listen to us talk about the mock tender and the flat iron steak. And then this episode, we're going to be talking about the arm roast and the shanks. The project we're currently working on, we labeled the shanks on the front part of the shoulders the four shanks, but we're just going to talk about shanks in general. Not really much difference between the fore and the aft shanks, the back shanks. Use a little nautical jargon there, but... I think this will be a good episode to dive deep in, try to give some updates for myself real quick. So I've been doing a lot of travel here lately, so haven't been out hunting and fishing much. Been up in the mountains quite a bit, but just kind of camping and hanging out. We did do some foraging, got some spruce tips, so I got some spruce tip syrup going. Also took some spruce tips and made, you know, tea to make jam with, or jelly or preserves, whatever part of the world you're living in. And then, I've been doing a lot of sourdough baking lately. I had a friend, who lives up at elevation in California give me a starter. And so I restarted my sourdough adventure. And so I've been, there was 1 week when we were going camping up in the mountains with a few other families. I made six loaves in 3 days. So I was pretty proud of myself. I was cranking them out. But now I'm just back down to like two loaves a week. But pretty solid recipe that I got going for my high altitude sourdough, I'll call it. It works out really, really well. And then outside of that, headed out to California here soon to go do some work and hang out at the beach and all that jazz. So if you're in San Diego and you're listening to this, you're likely going to be listening to the episode while I'm there. So that'll be a fun moment. Reach out if you're around on social media. And we'll come have a beer or a spearfish sesh or something. But I don't know. Adam, what do you got going on in your neck of the woods?
Well, I've mostly been doing a lot of foraging. So I've been... taking the dog for a long walk in the woods every day, that little spot, and been pulling up tons of chanterelles and more lobster mushrooms than I've ever found in my life, which has been great. And I've been harvesting pin cherries and choke cherries and lamb's quarters, just like a type of green. So I've just been, yeah, bringing home tons of stuff every day with me, which has been a lot of fun. Been dehydrating some mushrooms and making liqueurs out of the berries and stuff, and blanching and freezing the greens. So I've been kind of putting some of the stuff away for later on in the year to use in the winter. So, and then I'm going to be heading to the cottage soon and hopefully do a bunch of fishing when I'm there. So looking forward to that too. Haven't done actually much fishing at all this year, which is unlike me.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Excited. What do you aim to catch? Some bass and some pike?
Yeah, in our lake, it's bass, pike. There are lake trout and panfish, like perch and crappie and sunfish and stuff like that. So I'll probably do a big panfish fry up at one point. Yeah. We have a ton that live around our dock, and they, when August rolls around, I don't know if the heat changes something, but they just start biting us when we're swimming, which is a real pain. It doesn't really hurt, but it's just shocking and annoying, and they'll come and nip at your, like, moles and freckles and stuff like that. so I usually do a big panfish call around my dock, and then we eat them up, so we don't have to worry about that so much. And then we'll probably go for large and smallmouth, and I wouldn't mind catching a pike, though. They're better in the early season when the water's a little colder, but I'd still definitely take one home if I caught one right now.
Still tasty.
Yeah.
Exciting stuff going on then. I may try to fish while I'm in San Diego, too. I haven't quite decided yet if I'm going to have time. But if I do, I may get out and try to go fish some.
We'll see. Like a party boat kind of deal, or?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. If I've got a free morning, I may just try to go out and do like a half day or something on the party boat. That could be fun. But other than that, so let's dive. I mean, let's dive headfirst into what we wanted to talk about here. So for those that don't know, we are working our way forward, back on these different cuts, and we're following along with a very specific naming convention and guidelines and all this stuff to basically like make these butchering and cooking of these cuts more approachable for everybody. So this is our audio portion of the project, and we're going to have a written portion of the project, and of course a photography portion of the project, which is going to come out later. But with that, so today we're going to talk about the arm roast and the shanks. So the arm roast, in what we would consider that, it's basically a smorgasbord of different muscles that are existing around the humerus bone, which that is, if you're thinking through your anatomy, on a big game animal, on the front shoulder, you've got your scapula up top, you've got your humerus in the middle, and you've got your tibia and your fibia below. So the arm roast is what is wrapped around the humerus, which is that middle bone. You'll hear it called, I recently learned, Nick Otto refers to it as the humerus roast, not as in a roast that is funny, but as in a roast that is wrapped around the humerus bone. I've heard it called the clawed heart roast, the clawed roast, the cross rib roast, and English roast, and probably what a lot of people know it as and use it for if it comes off of a beef cow, it's the only type of cow there is. Well, I guess there's an elk cow. Never mind. A beef bovine is that it would be considered a pot roast, which is very common. And we're going to talk more about that in detail. But if we just look at where it is on the animal, that's kind of where it's located at. I think it would be to consider like your triceps, right? If you're trying to equate it to a muscle on a human.
Yeah, maybe your biceps and triceps together, or just the tricep?
Yeah, I think it would be your bicep, tricep, because then your other muscles would be up higher for your shoulder.
Yeah. I think on a pig, you'd be looking at the pork butt rather than the the pork buck would be the kind of the chuck, and the picnic would be the arm roast.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, which the chuck it too. So it'd be chuck, arm roast, and then your shank would still be lower, and your brisket.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of like, hopefully doesn't confuse everyone. I think that's fairly explained. So essentially what you would do if you're going to get these cuts off of the animal is you're going to have the whole front shoulder laid out in front of you with the outside of the shoulder facing up. You'll see where you have your scapula, which is your top bone. And just a reminder, you have scapula, your tibia, your fibula, and your humerus in between that. And so you're going to feel down the scapula until you feel where there's a joint. And it's going to be at a wider part of where that shoulder is versus, as you would think, a slimmer part. So if you can find where the ridge of the scapula comes down and then connects then in with that joint, that's going to be the top, the bottom of the scapula and the top of the humerus. So you're essentially going to make a straight line across that cut there. Where you hit the joint, you'll wiggle, jiggle, make some slices, and you'll be able to pop that off. So that top part would be your blade roast, which contains your mock tender and your flat iron steak, and then your Denver steak on the back. Your piece now that you have left are two cuts, which is your arm roast with your humerus and your shank. And so what I always do is I go from the bottom, which would be the shank, up until I find the next joint, which would be at the top of the tibia and the fibula with the base of the humerus. And you're going to work that knife kind of in there, and it takes a little bit of moving back and forth to get that out because it's almost kind of like a kneecap in there as well, is a way to think about it. And you have to kind of move and jiggle the knife. But once you get it freed, then you've got your shank free, you've got your arm roast bone in there, and you've got your blade roast. And so you can put your blade roast aside to go ahead and remove your all your cuts off of that, but we're just going to focus on the arm roast. And so when you have that arm roast, you can naturally just use your boning knife and go along, and you can debone that roast if you like, or you can leave it bone in. It's really whatever kind of flavor you're feeling. And then for the shanks, you've essentially got what you need already there, as long as you've disconnected it from the trotter at the bottom, you should have a full cut. I don't know, Adam, did I miss anything? Any tips for the butchery of both of those?
No, that sounds about right. The arm roast is on a round bone, which makes it a lot easier for butchering, where the other part of the shoulder is all on that kind of flat scapula piece, like the shoulder blade. It takes a little more fancy knife work to get everything off, but the arm roast is just kind of like a center round bone. You can, find the seam and cut everything from rounded and debone it quite easily if you intend to debone it. I found the shanks, sometimes I use the edge of the table to, like, I kind of take care of some of the ligaments and tendons holding together and use the edge of the table to pop them. If you're struggling getting the shank bone off of the humerus bone, just use a little bit of leverage on your table and it will usually go.
Generally, and there's a nice thick tendon right in that bone as well, but once you get that, generally frees up. I would say some things about the arm roast in general: it's a very heavily worked piece of meat where it's at, and it's been described, like, whenever you're talking about beef, and of course this would apply with different nomenclature across the way, but it's a very beefy term or beefy cut of meat, meaning it's got a lot of flavor that you would naturally think would occur, and that's just from all that work and use and wear and tear. So expect it to be kind of a bolder cut, right? Now, we've been talking a lot about those bold flavors and connective tissues and things like that. Those are all very present in both the arm roast and the shank. Very interesting fact is if you look at the clod roast, which we're using pretty synonymously with the arm roast, the clod roast and the brisket are the two primary cuts that kicked off the foundation of Texas-style barbecue in the early 1900s, which I thought was pretty cool. So there's some tie in to those of using those brisket and the clod roast for that style of cooking. So, and then the shanks. So we'll dive a little bit into the shanks some more. I feel like probably the nomenclature and naming of the shank is, I think I hit the nail on the head. So when you try to look it up and you try to figure out where it is, the closest thing I could find is in German, middle low German, which I don't know what that means. It's S-C-H-E-N-K-E, which I could only think of as shink, shinky or shink. And in German, it would be Schenkel, which means shank leg. So people also call it the shin, things like that. So I would say that the shanks on both the front and the back of the animal are probably the hardest working part of the animal. They're involved in every movement that the animal takes. Is it stepping, running, jogging, prancing, dancing, or fighting?
Standing even.
Standing, yeah, engaged standing. So that's why there's so much connective tissue. That's why there's so much, you know, the meat is fairly tough in the shank, but is also one of the most amazing cuts once you get those connective tissues cooked out and cooked down and that meat just falls apart and is full of delicious, big, beautiful flavors. So the shank, as I mentioned earlier, is below the humerus bone and connects to the tibia and the fibia. Fun fact about the tibia and the fibia, Adam, if you didn't know this, in most deer, they are, oh my gosh, they're fused. There we go. On most deer, the tibia and the fibia are fused, which I think is cool because essentially they're just like twisted together. They're not connected, but they're so close and so tight together that it's is almost they are one bone. And that helps add strength as the deer is standing and running, so that you don't have two like bones. Think about like if we tried to run on our arms, we don't do it very fast, but the deer has evolved differently.
You can't run on your doing a handstand.
No. Can you?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, naturally. Yeah. So I talked sort of already how to remove the cut on the shank, so we don't need to dive much more into that. If you get the trotter off at the bottom and you get it separated away from the humerus joint at the top, then you've got a shank. You can also, for both the arm roast and the shanks, I mentioned this, you can debone them to cook. That's perfectly fine. I've seen people do it. Although my personal opinion, I think with shanks, it's also equally easy just to have them already on the bone, and you can just use it to help flavor whatever you're cooking, as all those things cook out of the bone. Adam, any thoughts on the butchering of the shanks or connective tissue or all those things?
Well, we've talked about it a few times before, but that all that connective tissue once again turns into gelatin, like the collagen will cook into gelatin. So I find the shanks are one of the best cuts for like adding a ton of gelatin into your meals, making everything really like kind of lip smacking and delicious and unctuous and tender. Like it really adds a lot to whatever you're cooking, and it's incredible. And then we'll probably get into ossobuco, which is an Italian shank dish where they cross cut it. So instead of having the full shank, they cut it into with a bone saw, cut it into circles basically. And in that preparation, you actually have the marrow inside the humerus bone, or not the humerus bone, sorry, the shin bone basically, arm bone, on a rear shank, and that allows all the marrow to be accessed, which is one of my favorite things, is to dig a fork into the marrow bone and enjoy that too.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of get the shank and the marrow when it's cross cut. So one thing I do find when I'm butchering animals, if I have smaller animals, in either domestic or wild, like say a lamb, I'll leave the shanks whole. Beef, You probably don't have a pot that's going to fit that in it. And the same goes for elk or large white-tailed deer. Even you're probably not going to be able to fit a whole shank into your cookware. So you may need to like saw it in half. You don't necessarily have to do the cross-cut ossobuco style, but you might need to just saw it in half just so it can fit it into your pot to cook. So keep that in mind when you bring one home. Just put it inside your pot, your biggest pot, to see if it fits. And if it doesn't, then saw it in half.
And then buy a bigger pot.
Yeah, buy a bigger pot.
So a little bit of culinary history on them both. So both of these, you know, generally throughout the culinary history, as we look, those tougher cuts ended up being cheaper. Or leftovers, and so you had a lot of the unwealthy people would be consuming these cuts, which, as we learned, shaped the cuisine of the world. So if we look at the arm roast, we look at, they credit its likely introduction into American cuisine from the French through the braising technique, from the Germans through Sauerbraten, and we talked with our German friends a while back. The Braten stands out as a perfect preparation for game, is like a roast, slow cooked roast. And then you would also see other cultures too, slow cooking it, braising it, and whatever combination, which likely led to the pot roast, which now is widely cooked. I think originally it started out as like being called the Yankee roast, because it was a very Americanized version of with carrots and potatoes and very straightforward, but has since evolved. But great cuts for those slow cooking preparations. And then on the shank side, like Adam mentioned, the Italians would make ossobuco out of it and the French would just braise it. And I think that's your mantra, Adam. If all else fails, just braise it.
Yeah.
So, and then you had some additions.
Yeah, some of my favorite international dishes actually are shank. A lot of my favorite dishes are shank because I just love it. It's one of my favorite cuts. But one of my very favorite Chinese dishes is called fuki fai pian. I think that's how you pronounce it. But it's kind of like a...
What did you just say to me?
It's like a cold appetizer kind of. And traditionally it was used with... or made with offal. But nowadays they usually just use shank, like a beef shank. And you braise it slowly and then cool it down afterwards. And so it like kind of holds its shape once you cool it. And then you slice it thinly and dress it in chili oil and Sichuan peppercorn and everything. Serve it cold. And it's just incredible. And it's a really unique way of serving it. So it's just like a, almost like a meat salad or a cold salad to start things off. And then there's the famous Moroccan lamb shanks. And they usually use like a tagine, which is like a conical kind of clay cooking vessel. And they'll serve it with like preserved lemon and garlic and all sorts of fun stuff. In Pakistan, they have nahari, which is a very kind of common dish there, and that's like a beef shanks stewed with garlic and ginger and all sorts of like Pakistani Indian spices, and it's just incredible. You find it all over the world. Some of the best international recipes are these like down home kind of slow cooked, lots of spice, lots of flavor. The ossobuco as well. It's like I would recommend you go search out at these like international restaurants, shank dishes, because you'll find some delicious stuff.
Shanks and praises.
Shanks and praises.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, Leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
And when we talk about cooking, so for the arm roast itself, like some very common preparations methods I mentioned. So roasted, smoked, braised, slow cooked. You're not going to be chopping it up and cooking it quickly in steaks. I would definitely say if you've got an arm roast, devote some time, prepare it how you want it, and really enjoy it. You can, when you're thinking about like its actual preparation, I would say generally if you see a recipe for a roast, be it a game recipe or whatever, and they just call for a roast, you could sub in the arm roast and you would be perfectly fine in that preparation. So I would say you'd be good to go with that. And then I would say also to you, based on just the texture and the composition with all the different muscle groups, like once you get that collagen cooked down and liquefied and melted, we'll say that it's a great candidate to be shred into like tacos, into things like ropa vieja or like a pulled barbecue dish, like really anything you can think of. So a good candidate for that. Of course, shredding it, get it off the bone, do all that as well. And then for the shank, so I'm a big supporter of braising, just like Adam is. Like, I think with the shank, you can't go wrong with a good braise on it. Alternatively, I would say if you wanted to change it up a little bit, would be to add to smoke it a little bit before you braised it to give it some, like, different flavors. That's a cool way to bring more excitement to an already exciting cut of meat. And then the ossobuco cut. So we talked a little bit about cross-cutting the shank for ossobuco, but you want to I will give some tips on that. You will want to do that probably when it's frozen, I think is traditionally when it's done, or it's cut. You're cutting the meat and then cutting the bone. Don't try to saw the meat. If you're using like a sawzall or anything like that, you can definitely freeze it and cut it. If you're using like a meat processing bandsaw, you can definitely cut it frozen as well. Just be careful of those bone particles and stuff as you're cooking. You want to make sure you clean it up a bit before it goes into the pot.
You should be doing about 3, maybe 4 inches for those cuts. So if you cut them too thin, if you cut them at like an inch or 2 inch, they tend to really curl up around the bone once you cook them. But if you leave them thick enough, they'll kind of keep their own shape right towards the end. So I would aim for around 3 inches or so.
That's a good tip. And then if you get too low on that shank, you're going to get too little meat and just toss those bones in your stock bone pile. I would say probably out of, if you're looking at the average size of a deer shank, you're probably going to get at least 3 to 4 cuts off of it before you run out of meat, mm-hmm. I would say.
Yeah. I don't know if definitely there's any don't. Way to cook shank really with other than braising. I think it's such a tough cut of meat. It's probably the toughest cut of meat on the entire animal.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
I mean, you could sous vide it, but then you're really just kind of like braising it.
Yeah,
I mean, you could sous vide and then reverse sear, but I feel like if you're going to do that, you may as well just braise it.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever sous vide shanks. Let's see. Sous vide shanks.
And go ahead. That was quick.
Yeah, 48-hour sous vide lamb shank. Sous vide lamb shanks. Looks like a lot of people sous vide lamb shanks.
There you go.
Can you sous vide beef shanks?
Can't see why not.
Yeah, wow. So I guess people are, in fact, sous vide shanks. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. I like it.
There you go. If you are going to braise, I recommend braising at 300 degrees or lower. So you want that collagen to release slowly. And if you do it higher, like a higher temperature, you're going to dry out that meat. So even if you do it in liquid, it's going to just cook a little too fast. It's going to dry out those muscle fibers. You're gonna have a more unctuous, kind of tasty, moist roast if you do at like 275 to 300. So just want to point that out.
Nice, that's good. Yeah, and I think no matter what you use, if you're gonna use the humerus bone, if you're gonna use the bone from the shanks, you're gonna use the shanks themselves to make a braise. Or a braising liquid, or you could also use them for stocks as well. Mm-hmm. Like, I think they would make really good stocks. You could even cook your shanks in whatever liquid and then take that braising liquid and turn it into a stock, or reduce it down and turn it into a sauce. I think would be really good too.
It's going to be incredible sauce.
Awesome.
I actually forgot one of my favorite shank international recipes out there. And it's actually a pork shank, so pork, which would also be known as a pork hock. Have you ever heard of Schweinshaxen?
No, but I'm excited. I heard of it now.
It's a massive piece of meat, and they braise the whole hock, and then they fry it so the skin gets all crispy, and then you just eat it like a caveman. It's a ridiculously large piece of meat. You know those like Renaissance festivals, you can have that massive turkey leg and just walk around and chum it? Kind of like that, but even bigger and more ridiculous. And it's delicious because it's been braised, so it's like nice and tender inside. Then they fry it on the outside, so it's super crispy. It's incredible. Schweinshaxen.
One of my favorite ways I like shanks, and it's pork shanks as well, is used to go to, I forget it was a restaurant in San Diego, but they did like barbecue like shank lollipops type deal, and it was kind of the same concept. It was like on a stick, and they cooked the shank down, and it was obviously off a smaller pig, but pretty tasty. And another way we didn't talk about was pressure cooking.
Oh, of course.
Which will lead us into our next recipe. So this one, this is an actual recipe we're going to talk about, and this is by Brandon Dale, one of our contributors here at Harvesting Nature, and he's based out of New York, but he did some Western hunting and got an elk last year, and he was having a bit of a gathering, it appears, and he cooked up elk shank tangine canapé. Basically, what that is he took the elk shanks, and I can tell, did he debone them? Let me scroll down here. Oh, he cubed it, which is interesting. So completely off the bone, cubed up with ginger, scallions, cloves, turmeric. It's got some others, paprika, all those things. And he took the deboned elk shank after it's cubed up into 2 to 3 inch pieces. And he put it in, what did he do? He tossed the meat in the spices, marinated it, and then put some olive oil in a cast iron or an Instapot, also known as a pressure cooker. Browned it, took it out, and then put some stock in there, and he essentially pressure cooked it with a bunch of other ideas. So taking the flavors and the ingredients that you would typically find in a tagine and incorporating that with elk, and then cooked it basically for about an hour in a pressure cooker until it was fall off fork tender or falling off the bone if you're cooking it with the bone. So then he heated up his grill, brushed the pita bread with olive oil until he got some nice grill marks on it and grilled it. And then he took a tzatziki and put 2 teaspoons of the elk shank tagine on the top, and then he put some parsley and mint. Sounds really, really tasty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because shanks take so long to cook. Like, they're so tough, and they need to release everything. Wild game, and in particular, maybe like an older animal, you're going to be cooking your shanks for hours and hours to get them tender. So if you have a pressure cooker at home or Instapot or whatever and feel comfortable doing that, it's actually a great piece of meat to pressure cook because, yeah, you don't need to wait for hours and hours and hours. You can do it inside an hour or 2 hours.
And so then continuing on with our shankiness, this past New Year's, I made a delicious shank recipe by braising the venison shanks and then taking that braising liquid, using it to cook my rice and black-eyed peas. So those that don't know, it's a very southern tradition to have black-eyed peas. This is a very southern dish called Hoppin' John. And so I made that with, I think I used antelope. And I used some of the Harvest of Nature waterfowl blend, which is pretty tasty. But put that in there. I'm trying to think if I braised it in... I did a slow cooker, yeah. So I braised the shanks overnight and then prepared it. I seared the shanks first, prepared it, added in my stock, garlic, celery, let it cook overnight until the meat was falling off the bone. So make sure you're doing that on low because, like Adam mentioned, you do it too high, even in the slow cooker or the crock pot, as people call it, you're going to end up with maybe a little tougher meat than you want. It's going to get dried out. So... I use that. This is one example of using that braising liquid and incorporating it into a dish to just like really accentuate the flavor. And so essentially did that with the rice and the beans, which I used fresh or dried black-eyed peas versus using canned. Mm. I think the flavor is so much better. So, and then you mix it all back together and serve it, and boom. Tasty. Adam, while we're on the topic of shanks, you want to talk about your ancho venison shank tacos?
Sure. It was kind of like a fun little taco recipe I made. I basically took some venison shanks, did the braising technique, so I seared them in some fat in the Dutch oven. And then I actually seared some ancho chilies after them, toasted them, and then added them to the pot with chopped onions and garlic and spices and a bottle of beer. And added the shanks back in, then let that braise for about 4 hours or so. And until the meat was just like falling off the bone. And then I made a roasted tomatillo and pineapple salsa with some jalapenos and onions, and just roast everything under the broiler for a couple minutes until it all charred, and then blended it up with some cilantro and lime juice, and basically toasted the... I think for these ones, I made my own tortillas at home. I think I just got in a tortilla press, so I was experimenting. But I toasted tortillas, I shredded the meat. There's a little bit of sauce left in the pot, so I reduced that down until it was nice and thick, and tossed the meat back into that thickened sauce. Dumped it on the tacos, poured some of the salsa back over them, and yeah, they were just delicious. You have like the super rich shank meat that's in this like kind of spicy ancho sauce, contrasted with a really bright and acidic salsa coming from the tomatillos and the pineapple. So it's a really nice combination of flavors.
It sounds delicious. I had a grilled cheese today. So hungry. So let's move on. We'll change gears and switch it over to the roast here. So the roast, for the arm roast, we don't have any specific recipes on our website for arm roast, but if you go and you just search roasts, you can, like I said, apply any of those to it. And the one that I really chose to talk about, because I think it would be a great candidate, is the Mississippi pot roast. And this really came forth in my mind as like that big internet craze where everybody was either taking the ranch dressing packet full of God knows what and putting it in the slow cooker with some stock and whatever else and making like this pot roast. But I decided that I was going to make a fresh version of the Mississippi pot roast, which is still one of my very favorite pot roasts to serve because you put it in the crock pot and you just let it go. But the thing that I said like makes this really great is that you're using all fresh ingredients. So you're using yellow onion, and you're using pepperoncini and vinegar and fresh dill and garlic powder and chives and parsley and whatever your favorite starch is. And so you're cooking all those things and you're serving it on top of the starch, and you just really get this like really tangy, yummy, not really spicy, but it's got some good twang to it that you would expect from like ranch dressing and stuff. Not like weird, overly ranch dressing, but it worked. And so I've continued to serve it, but the arm roast is a perfect candidate for that, I think, to be in there, because it is. It's like that pot roast, just that shred apart, big chunks of saucy meat. And then, Adam, I pulled one off your website, your Chipotle Venison Pot Roast on Hatch Grits. So
yeah, that was a really, really tasty one. I used the arm roast for that. And I just used a boneless one, so I just cut it off and split it into two pieces, I think, and froze them separately. There's only two of us at home, so I tend to break the meat apart into smaller pieces. I gave that one a similar process as the last recipe I just mentioned, by basically searing the meat in a Dutch oven until really nicely browned, taking it out of the pot, adding a bunch of spices like cumin and smoked paprika and that kind of stuff, with some onions and garlic, chipotle peppers, added the meat back to the pot once that was all browned, and poured over some stock and some can of Rotel tomatoes with the green chilies in it. Put that in the oven for 3 hours. You could also do it in a slow cooker, but I do recommend, if you're going to slow cook it or crock pot it or whatever, to sear it first. So take a cast iron pan or whatever, sear the meat, and then put it in there. It's going to be a lot more flavorful like that. If you just put it straight into the slow cooker, you're missing out on a lot of that Maillard reaction that's going to give a lot of that caramelized flavors. And it's going to be a little more bland. So, yeah, if you're going to slow cook it, hit it with a sear first. Anyways, I took the meat out after about 3 hours of cooking. It was nice and falling apart. I took all that, the onions and the sauce and everything in the bottom of the pan, poured it into the blender, let it cool down a bit so the blender doesn't explode. And then blended that until smooth. So that just forms an instant sauce. Like an instant, delicious, unctuous, beautiful sauce. Just like that. With no additions whatsoever. And then I made some grits with some... I think I used Gouda cheese. And I had a can of chopped Hatch chilies. So I just mixed that all in there. And then just served... Kind of pulled the venison roast apart into big chunks. And put it on top of the grits. And poured over the sauce, and that was dinner. It was really delicious. It's a great way to use that cut. And I never get Hatch chilies up here, so I got those actually when I was visiting in the States, and brought a bunch of cans back with me because I never get to eat them up here. So those grits were actually really good too.
I'm excited about Hatch chili season coming up. Yeah. It's going to be so good. I think we're going to try to make it down and get some Pueblo chilies. It's going to be Colorado and New Mexico battle for who's got the better chilies. So we'll see. Maybe we'll get to go on a tasting tour. But you marked on here venison shank sliders. And I also had a sandwich I was going to talk about with the shanks too, so we could just combine them. Sure. So if you want to talk about yours first, and then I'll just briefly mention mine.
Sure. These sliders are like the perfect thing to do like a Super Bowl party, or if you're having a bunch of friends over, just kind of like an appetizer. And it's just a really generic kind of recipe. You just take like this process that we keep mentioning, this searing and braising. You just do that with some venison stock or whatever you're making, or wine or beer. Do a very basic braise. Take the meat once it's done and pull it apart and shred it. And you can actually do this with shanks or an arm roast, either or. And then you just take, you split a whole bunch of slider buns, stack it on with some provolone cheese. I made like a horseradish mayo with black peppers, did some pepperoncini peppers, and then stacked that all into the sliders, brushed the tops with butter, and then put a bunch of Parmesan cheese on top and put them in the oven till they're warm and crispy. And those will disappear quick, really quick.
Yep.
They're delicious. So, yeah, it's just a really good generic recipe to just have a bunch of shredded shank or arm roast meat on hand. You can basically put it anywhere you want. Tacos, sandwiches, sliders, burgers. The world's your oyster.
We're not talking about seafood.
Oh, that's right. the world's your arm roast.
There you go. I did almost identical to that, except for I was watching that show, The Bear, the cooking show. I was watching that a lot, and they were doing the like Italian sandwiches at the very first of it, because it's what the base of the restaurant is. And so I made like essentially the Italian sandwich version in a slider with like, peppers and onions and the very like hefty, greasy, sloppy shanks that I had braised in there and then added a nice sauce to. And so it just like was just super tasty. But yeah, I took it to a BHA event last year, and it was a wild game potluck, and that was the first thing gone. So I was pretty proud of myself. But so I think that wraps us up. I mean, for the amount of recipes we talked about, this is a ton of recipes. So I would hope that if you're looking in the world of arm roast and you're looking in the world of shanks, that you've got a good basis now of butchering, cooking, and eating. If you want to dive more into it, there's definitely a lot of information out there on the World Wide Webs when it talks about shanks. Specifically, arm roast, you got to dig a little bit, Google some of those different names, and if you want to find that. And then, I don't know, Adam, I'll turn it over to you. You got any alibis, misfires, last thoughts?
Actually, one thing that we forgot to mention that I just wanted to mention.
One thing. Okay.
Grinding. So
grinding.
We forgot to mention grinding. So the arm roast is a great candidate for grinding. It's kind of a shoulder. It doesn't have quite as many uses as some other parts of the animal. I find if I'm going to be grinding some shoulder, I'll often grind that arm roast. When it comes to shanks, I never, ever, ever grind my shanks because I love them so much. But you can grind them. I would just recommend that you have a very good heavy-duty grinder, because they're so full of sinew and connective tissue that like a stand mixer grinder or something like that could easily clog up by pushing those shanks through. But I would just recommend not grinding them at all and braising them, because
your shanks.
So, I just wanted to mention that before we logged out here.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm glad you hit on that, too. That's a good one. All right. So, now with your alibi.
Oh, that was my alibi. Was that it? I have nothing else to say.
Okay. Oh, perfect. Well, I will say this then. These two cuts of meats are fabulous to work with. Definitely, I think about back in the olden days when they would consider them, quote-unquote, peasant food. I kind of, like, giggle to myself that how much these two cuts of meat have likely shaped culinary history, just in the way that we've learned to cook and eat and what we do enjoy. And if you've never had a shank before, you should save the shank on your next animal, or go to the store and buy a shank and prepare it and just learn how to cook it, because it's such a great cut of meat. And just really keep it in your toolbox. Once you perfect the art of braising, which is not hard to do, it's something you could do with anything. So it's good to have. But as always, we'll put all these recipe show notes together and get them posted. So you'll have links to all the recipes. You'll have links to some of the more in-depth stuff we talked about. And then also to whatever podcast platform you're listening to, please punch that 5-star button, leave us a review, tell us we're doing wrong, or, tell us we're doing right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.